Welcome to Parents' Perspective. "What's all the racket I'm hearing?" Sherry's mom complained over the phone. "Oh," Sherry laughed, "since it's such a rainy day, I let the kids take out the pots, pans, lids, spoons, and whatever else isn't breakable for their own band. It is a little hard on the ears." "Funny," her mother mused. "I remember your brothers and you used to fill glasses with different levels of water and try to figure out the variety of pitches you could make. That kept you very busy." "Of course, all I do is wash glasses these days," she chuckled. "Well, you were pretty attached to that set of bongo drums," her mom reminded her. "And whenever you felt blue, you retreated to your room and put on your radio, full blast. Billy and John always had some kind of band going on in the basement. What could be louder than that?" "Sounds like my grandchildren are trying," laughed Sherry's mom. "Do you have earplugs?" From a parent's perspective, what is the importance of music in a child's life? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We're honored to have with us a special guest with much varied professional experience with music. Maestro Peter Gajewski is music director and conductor of the National Philharmonic. He's also in much demand as a guest conductor worldwide. Born in Poland, Maestro Gajewski began studying piano when he was 4 years old. He's winner of many prizes and awards, serves on the music faculty at George Washington University, and also holding a law degree, makes time for some legal consulting projects as well. He's the father of a 9-year-old son and a 15-year-old daughter. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Maestro Gajewski.
Hello, thrilled to be here.
Now, would you say that music is something inherent in youngsters? Do they have a natural sense of rhythm, or is that largely developed?
It's absolutely natural in one sense that everyone can develop it. I would say it's as natural as speaking. If you're not introduced to speaking, you will not learn by yourself. But if you're introduced to it, of course, you will learn to speak in due course. And the same thing with music. If you're not introduced to it, you will not learn it. But if you are, it's natural in that sense.
But you can introduce children to it by playing Rubber Ducky or, children's music on CDs for them. But that isn't the same thing as introducing them to symphony or opera.
That's like saying you could introduce children to nursery rhymes and nothing else on records. Will that teach them to speak? On some level, perhaps. But it's the variety of different sounds that they learn and the meanings behind those sounds and how they can duplicate it.
Taking music lessons has become almost a rite of passage in the United States. How do you feel about that? Do you feel that music lessons are beneficial? Do you think all children should absolutely take music lessons? What's your take on this?
I absolutely do. And there's lots of science to support that. First of all, music is kind of mystical in a sense, in that we really, truly, as a civilization, still don't have a grasp on how it works. What is it that makes one tune make us feel one way and another tune make us feel a different way? What is understood is that there are brain connectors that will only develop if they're introduced to music. So it's a sort of a use-it-or-lose-it proposition for youngsters. Further, it's apparent that those connectors are also connectors that are used for analytical skills and other skills, so that basically you can enhance your analytical development through introduction to music at a very early age. So, you know, if I had my druthers, kids would be learning music the same time they learn to speak.
Now, you just said something a little bit controversial, I'm sure, among some of our listeners, that you think that children should be learning music if you could have your way. As they're learning to talk, they're also learning music. How can parents tell if their children are ready for actual lessons in music?
Well, it's a question of how you define actual lessons. Asking when a child is ready for music is like asking when is a child ready to play. I mean, they're ready when they're ready. Music can be part of play. It's a question of how formal the exposure is and how formal the play is. I mean, parents read with their children. How old do the children have to be read to? Typically, you read to children who haven't even learned to speak. you read to them because that's how they begin to learn to speak. You could also sing to them, and they would immediately begin to pick up on the singing and the different tones. Obviously, if you do it at a very early age, they will not respond immediately, as they will not to reading. But over a course of time, it will develop the sensibility in them.
But in terms of formal lessons, what we all think of as the kid sits down at the piano and has to practice a certain amount of time every day, and then the music teacher sees the kid after a week and the kid should have mastered X, Y, Z. What about that kind of structure? How old should a kid be before he or she is confronted with that?
Well, I would say it's probably grossly unfair to a kid to get him to sit down at a piano and do something that he doesn't want to do, and I would never advocate that one does that. On the other hand, kids are naturally drawn to music, but it's best introduced if it's introduced in the context of a child and a parent doing that, whatever it is that they're doing with music, together. One big example, obviously, that can be cited is the whole Suzuki method of learning primarily string instruments. It also exists for piano and flute, but it's primarily for strings, primarily for violin, which was developed by a Japanese pedagogue, Shinichi Suzuki. He called it talent training, that you learn talent, that you're trained in talent in your very, very early formative years, starting from birth, but in terms of formal training, maybe at 2.5, 3 years old, 3.5, somewhere there. But that it needs to be introduced as a activity of children and parents together, not something that a child gets sent off to do by themselves, because that's no fun at all, and it's very sad for children. The book that Shinichi wrote, which is sort of the gospel of what he preaches, is called Nurtured by Love. And in that book, he basically talks about this is something that children and parents can and need to do together as work on music. Now to stop avoiding your question altogether, my children, and I have two, started violin lessons at age 3, and it seemed like a reasonable time. Again, you have to be very, very careful about how it's introduced. And the way my children were introduced is for about 6 months prior starting to lessons, I simply took them on field trips, for lack of a better word, every few weeks, to a group Suzuki violin lesson. So they saw children, and maybe a dozen children, working together on playing violin. Guess what? Would it surprise you to know that pretty soon my child said, "Dad, I want to do that." And from then on, after resisting a little bit, I acquiesced. And we went on an adventure that lasted, many, many years and still continues on many levels. And it was interesting for me because I'm not a violinist. So I actually got to pick up a violin and learn along with my older one a little bit, because that's part of the requirement of the Suzuki method. And it was a lot of fun, and it brought us close. It made them love music. And I think also it made other work, other education easier. I am fortunate enough they're both very, very bright kids and do very, very advanced work in school. It's very difficult to attribute on this anecdotal basis their success to the fact that they started violin at age 3. But there's scientific basis on that as well. And anyway, it seemed like a positive experience all around.
Sure does.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on music and kids.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Maestro Peter Gajewski, music director and conductor of the National Philharmonic, about music and kids. When children start a formal regimen where practice is part of it, how do you advise parents about how to handle that issue?
Well, this will sound like a terribly naive statement, but if a kid doesn't want to practice, then the kid shouldn't be practicing. And I can hear just parents all around listening to it. Well, this gentleman certainly hasn't seen my kid, because if I took that attitude, they'd never be taking music lessons. I had to force them. It's really age specific. So that's part of the answer. At age three, certainly all practice happens in the context of play with the parent. And kids love it. They love the attention. If they have a choice of playing with a ball by themselves or playing with a violin with their parent, they'd rather play with a violin with their parent. So that solves itself. In terms of when children get older, there are different solutions along the way. I mean, one flip answer to your question is, what happens if your kid doesn't want to do homework, would rather go out and play? To me, my kids' music education was part of their education and was non-negotiable, as their going to school was non-negotiable. I wouldn't think for a minute to pull them out of school because they refused to do their homework, and I'm guessing that parents listening to the show wouldn't either. So this was simply non-negotiable. And the kids knew it, and they didn't try to negotiate it because they knew that it was non-negotiable. And frankly, with my kids, it wasn't a problem because it was something they always did, which I guess brings me to the final part of the answer. When you start something at age three, by the time you're seven, you can't remember your life without it. So that their violins, my kids' violins, became really so much an integral part of them that giving it up was not even a question on the table, because they never remembered not playing. Their life would be altered in a way that they couldn't conceive if they stopped playing. So starting early definitely helps a lot, but it's not the alpha and omega.
Have you seen kids burn out?
Absolutely. And both of my kids did, so there's another example. My daughter at age nine decided she didn't want to take violin lessons anymore, and I said fine, and she stopped, and she stopped for a full year, except when I say she stopped taking lessons and she stopped practicing, but certainly once in a while, when there was nothing else to do, she picked up her violins and played some tunes, As things progressed, about a year later, my son and I were involved in a musical experience, and she wanted to tag along. And I said, "Why don't you bring your violin?" She said, "Okay." And pretty soon, she was playing in a group. And pretty soon, it became obvious that in order to move forward, she needed to come back and start practicing. And she was quite happy to do that. And now she's 15, and she plays very, very well. And right now, practices a lot. But a lot of these kinds of things happen in spurts. There are times when practice becomes more of a difficulty. It's getting over hurdles. And sometimes there are spurts where kids just naturally gravitate because it becomes enjoyable, almost like anything else in life.
Do you see a learning curve of skill?
Yeah, there's just many, many different variables. There are age aspects to it. Obviously, you don't learn as quickly at age three as you would at age 14. There is an aspect of just how much the kid, him or herself, is driven to either play very well or just to perfection in general, or to winning awards or competitions, or there are many, many different factors that can drive this. And I've seen all of this in my kids as well. My kids were not kids that got very, very good at a very young age.
One thing that seems very important is when they get to a point where their skill is proficient enough that they can own it, then it seems to me that's a place where kids take off.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And although there are always challenges beyond and beyond to reach for, and music is so difficult, the number of hours required to learn to play any instrument, oboe, cello, piano, well, is staggering. Typically, the people who make it a profession are the people who start at age three And by the time they're ending high school, they're considered by everybody to be very good, but they are nowhere near the level they need to be as professionals. And then they do a four-year of conservatory, and typically they're still not at the level to be professionals. Typically they do several more years of graduate work. And when I talk about doing years, we're talking probably averaging 4 or 5 hours a day in a practice room. And unfortunately for musicians, that doesn't mean weekends off. It's 7 days a week, not just 5 days a week. So the number of hours it takes to learn this is staggering.
It's interesting. One of the bits of research that Linda and I did for one of our books had to do with talent and developing talent. And a very wise author was citing some studies in which it was clear that it wasn't the talent that the child started with that made the difference in his or her success in that field. It was the amount of time the child developing decided to put into developing what it was that the child started with.
That's absolutely true from my experience. It's really the sweat equity much more than anything else. But again, starting young can be key. I mean, if a child was not introduced to music at all and started at, say, age 12 to be introduced to music, it's a very, very rare example of a child like that being able to reach great proficiency. Now, which brings up another point, whether great proficiency is really a goal all the time. Mm-hmm. And there are so many aspects to music that are beneficial to kids beyond the far out that I talked about that involve discipline, self-discipline and motivation. And such that are also very, very valuable. Those kinds of things are more akin to playing sports. I mean, you can play an instrument in high school. You can play football in high school and get the value from each of those pursuits. That's pretty equivalent. It's the discipline. It's the teamwork. It's the being reliable. Those kinds of things.
And the pleasure and the self-satisfaction.
And the pleasure and the self-satisfaction, absolutely.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on music and kids.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Maestro Peter Gajewski, music director and conductor of the National Philharmonic, about music and kids.
I think so often in skill areas like music and sports and some of this, we forget that the significance for most people, and children particularly, is the self-expression that comes with being able to have some ownership of that art, whatever it happens to be.
That's very true. That's very true, and they're very proud of it, and that makes them much more secure individuals.
With my children, I knew immediately that there was something doing when I saw them either go to their rooms and turn on their stereos loudly or sit down at the piano. It was very interesting. Those were the places where they would go when there was a high or a low of great magnitude.
Mm-hmm.
That was where they went. But the other thing that I did want to mention with all the parents who may be listening who have 10-year-olds who haven't started music lessons and they may be wringing their hands and thinking, oh my goodness, we've wasted an opportunity and so forth. A fellow named Leonard Bernstein never touched a piano till he was 10.
This is true. He was my teacher.
Is that right?
I don't know if you know that. Yeah. I don't know if it was in the materials that you have.
Oh,
that's right.
Oh, my goodness. And he was pretty good, was he?
Oh, he was very good. And I can cite other examples. So there's absolutely, yeah, no, never too late.
Now, in terms of selecting an instrument, we've been discussing things as though the instrument were already selected. But if you're starting this process and you're not a musician, how do you help a child select the appropriate instrument?
clearly the easiest way to select an instrument is if a kid were to say, I want to do this. You know, then you don't have a problem on your hands. You go with a kid. That's what they're falling in love with. You roll with it. There's scientific research to support that, specifically violin, and I'll tell you in a second why that is, does some very good things for the brain. The nice thing about a violin is that it can be sized to a kid. You can do that with a violin because it's a stringed instrument. You can loosen the strings and still have it produce the same sound. You can't do that with a wind instrument when you're talking about the length of the wind tunnel that needs to be created to create a certain pitch. You could only, in theory, do it with a piano because you'd need to have a custom piano built that fits the size of pint-sized hands. One thing that distinguishes stringed instruments is that, other than, say, guitar and mandolin, is that they have no frets. Frets being those delineations on the fingerboard that tell you where to put your finger to make a certain sound. So you actually have to develop that skill by yourself. You have to know that when you put down your first finger on a certain string, you need to put it down in a certain place in order to get the violin to produce whatever note you're after, a D, a E, a G, whatever. It's this critical listening and trying to get better and trying to match your teacher's sound that is an incredibly complicated intellectual process for the brain, and the development that that comes about as a result of it is tremendous.
Maestro, you work with kids in an orchestral setting. What benefits do you see in a group environment like that?
Well, it's first of all, it's a very positive social environment. In many ways, kids who are in orchestras or on football teams or soccer teams are already pre-selected, self-selected, and there are kids who want to achieve. So you're putting your kid in an environment with other kids who are likely to have good influence on each other. Any positive activity like that just helps the kid develop, keeps them away from drugs and other terrible things that the world has out there. Also, any group activity involves teamwork and involves one kid relying on another kid, and those are just all skills that are very, very positive.
The other thing is, you would think that if a child has an instrument that he or she plays alone constantly, there's not the impetus for increasing the skill, and there's not the sense of satisfaction of doing something with somebody else. It's a very lonely pursuit.
That's right. And coming together with others to do it is a lot of fun. And then also there's a little bit of you see how others do it differently. You learn from others. So it's a very, very positive experience all around.
What resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue this topic further?
Well, talking to musicians is a good one, because musicians love to talk about what they do. They typically love what they do and want to spread the good news. So talking to musicians, talking to school music teachers is a great thing. Of course, if you visit your library, there are lots and lots of books on the topic. I already mentioned one, Nurtured by Love by Suzuki. It's actually a very fascinating book to start with. There are some great websites, not to overwhelm you. Start your listeners off with one. Playmusic.org is a website sponsored by the American Symphony Orchestra League, and that website is lots and lots of fun. You can basically listen and learn about all kinds of instruments, and we'll also have links to several other websites that do the same thing in different ways. So there's lots and lots of resources.
The other thing that I think happens in a lot of big cities is orchestras have what they call an instrument petting zoo.
Yeah, there are many experiences that local orchestras will have for kids. There may be special children's concerts or family concerts. My orchestra in particular, the National Philharmonic, offers something we call All Kids, All Free, All the Time, which is a very, very unusual program. We feel we're way ahead of the curve. But basically, it is exactly what I said, that kids are welcome to our programs free of charge. Now, there's a disclaimer here. We limit it to kids 7 years or older. The reason we do that is for patrons who pay $50 for a ticket to be distracted by a kid who may not be ready to be in that setting is a problem. But other than that, we welcome all kids to our concerts.
And I would think the value of not only hearing the instrument, but an opportunity to touch the instrument or maybe do something hands-on with the instrument would be very helpful in terms of helping a child decide what instrument he or she wants to play.
Absolutely. And a lot of school systems have programs of musicians coming into schools or, in some cases, instrumental teachers that offer introductions to different instruments at some grade level in many school systems. In our school system, it's at the third grade level.
Well, you have offered a tremendous amount of information to all of our listeners. Maestro Peter Gajewski, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 225. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.